So, good morning to each of you. First of all, I noticed, let me start somewhere else. Fathers. I feel like I need to apologize that I don't have a Father's Day sermon. And it's not that I don't think about fathers being a father or what it means to father somebody. Because in my conversations with people, I hear a lot of things about the positive things that fathers did for people and the negative things. The things they did that were hurtful and the things they didn't do that would have been helpful. And so I was thinking of just this little item in 1 Thessalonians 2, where Paul says to the Thessalonians that we were gentle among you as a nursing mother cherishes her own children. And this is a man speaking. And then further on, he says he was with them as a father. I charged every one of you as a father does his own children. So the two sides here of gentleness and firmness. And I just want to say one thing I've learned in life is we can't be better people and we can't be better fathers than what we are emotionally and spiritually mature. And the one implication of that is that when we, as parents, father or mother, when we start making whatever is going on be about us and not about what this child or person in our care needs, then I think we start slipping. And it's hard to be a good mother and a good father. It's challenging. But this is one rule. Is this about me or is this about the needs of my child? So this morning, I was struck with this song that I believe was written by Gary, the second verse, God in us working as we cooperate, God in us willing, we freely imitate, which basically summarizes my sermon. I have preached six sermons in this series of how do people grow and change? How do we become a different person? Well, the reality is we are all becoming a different person. We're either becoming a better person or a worse person. We are all being changed somehow by something. And so this morning I'm talking about choosing, willing, choosing and doing as we cooperate with God, with the Holy Spirit. So the sixth, in the previous sermons, just to summarize, I've said that being transformed into the character of Christ includes changing the way we believe and changing our feelings, our attitudes, our emotions, changing what we believe in our minds and hearts. Those are things that I've talked about. And so this morning I want to consider how our will functions, our chooser functions, and what it takes to change what we habitually choose to do. So anyone who thinks very long about it knows that what a person wants or wills or chooses determines what a person does. I think most of us intuitively know that. But it is also true that what a person chooses to think and feel and believe determines what a person chooses to do. Also, anyone who thinks very long about it knows that what a person wants or wills or chooses determines what a person does. So we reflect on this, and most of us, I think, can think of times when we can remember having decided that we are going to do something different. We are maybe sick and tired of this habit we have, and it's getting in the way. It gets in our way of living a more joyful life or something. And we decide, I am going to stop that. I'm not doing that anymore. And I think most of us can think of times that, well, we decided that, but it didn't result in a change. Like we decide, it's not really right for me to be hollering at my family members, getting out of control, or looking at pornography, or whatever this thing is that we have fallen into. But the problem is, since we don't know, maybe, we don't know what choices to make so that we can stop making the choice of doing what we're doing, we continue to do what we do. And our behavior is the result of more than just a decision to do or not do something. Because there are reasons why we're doing or not doing whatever. And that is, our choice depends on what we are thinking, what we are feeling, our attitudes, and so on. So a major hindrance to making good choices is that, and this is on your notes under the introduction, a major hindrance to making good choices is that our chooser or will cannot make choices apart from what we think and feel and believe. That is just a fact of who we are as people and how we behave and how we make choices. So I tried to think of how to say this in a way that would catch your attention. So I have this statement that our choosing capacity is not an independent part of us that lives in a separate room of our house and can just choose the right thing, no matter what is going on in other rooms of the house. So if you can visualize that, that is not how we're made. We're not made so that our chooser is over here in some compartment and it can just decide and carry out as if there's no other part of us involved. So our chooser cannot choose to do the right thing if we are thinking and feeling the opposite. And what this means then is that will alone, or the chooser alone, cannot carry us to change because our will is dependent on what we think and feel and believe. And what this means is that in order to change what we're able to do after we choose to do it, we have to work at willing to think and feel and believe something different first. So I spent a fair amount of time trying to think about illustrations to use in this sermon because and it was really somewhat of a challenge, and I have many, many folders of notes that I've taken in talking with people that are quite extensive notes. And I looked in some of these folders, and then I decided I'm not using any of those illustrations. You know, somebody might listen to this sermon online, and then, you know, that would not be good. So I'm trying to summarize here in terms of an illustration. So the people I talk with, and maybe you're like this, I'm not talking about anybody here. They tell me things like, I am sick and tired of looking at porn the way I do, or relating to my parents the way I do, or always being late for work, or not being able to read my Bible and pray regularly. And there are 500, 1,000 of these kinds of I am sick and tired of things that you, everybody else, has. And in all of these and similar challenges, the problem is that something inside the person, whether it is deep-seated fears or it feels true to me beliefs or negative attitudes or some commitment they've made not to do a certain thing or not to fear of relating, fear of being in a certain spot, around certain kinds of people, whatever it is, it hinders the person from doing the thing that they say they want to do. And what these people need to do, I'm just giving a summary here, is identify, what they need to do is identify the hindrances that keep them from choosing and actually doing the thing they say they want to do. And they need help to choose to surrender or yield that hindrance to God. And this includes choosing to let go of untrue ideas and beliefs and sinful attitudes so they can choose to do the right thing. If you want to change your behavior, you have to first choose to change your thoughts and beliefs and attitudes. And the fact is that all of this is a slow process that takes time for most people. Now, if I can divert a little bit. Now, so I want to talk a little bit about church life. And one of the goals of church should be that the people who worship together find times and ways to assist each other in growing and changing and becoming more like Christ. And we could call this, what I'm talking about, we could call it discipleship. And the question could be, well, where can this discipleship happen? I'm on a bunny trail, but it matters. Where can this discipleship happen? Well, it can happen in sermons to some extent. The difficulty with sermons in relation to discipleship, I can't have a conversation with anybody in particular. So it can't have a personal application in terms of me talking through an issue with somebody. It could happen in prayer meeting. It could happen in Sunday school. All of these places do have limitations, but they provide opportunities. And I have been in mentoring groups, discipleship groups is what they were, like 5-6 people in the group. And a lot of discipleship happened, but here's the point I want to make. So this thing of speaking into a person's feelings and attitudes and beliefs and what controls them so that they don't make wise decisions, or they make a wise decision and they can't carry it out, is that the person has to have the freedom to have a conversation about the hindrances, the challenges, the barriers. And if you're in a prayer group or in a Sunday school class and someone makes some comment that indicates they have a question about something, or they are transparent enough to say they have a struggle with something, anything that's done to shut that down ruins discipleship. People can't grow and change if they don't have freedom to talk about the thing that they're struggling with. And so if we're uncomfortable with people having a process of growth, we can't disciple people. Does that make any sense? That's, I think, a very basic issue in church life is how transparent are we able to be in our prayer requests or in our in public like this or in private in smaller groups? And can we have patience and compassion with people in their issues? I'm still on my introduction. Three scriptures. This is still the introduction. Philippians 2:12-13 reads, "Therefore, my beloved, as you have always obeyed, not as in my presence only, but now much more in my absence, work out your own salvation with fear and trembling, for it is God who works in you both to will and to do for his good pleasure." So work out your own salvation with fear and trembling. Okay, there are some verses in the Bible, some phrases in the Bible, some statements and commands in the Bible that, for my part, I kind of cringe because they don't have a footnote to explain what is meant by this thing. That's it. So here's one of those. If this is a recommendation that we get people into a fear and trembling state and think that that's going to make them able to live an upright life, I just want to say it's not going to work. It's not going to work. And so I don't think this is a verse that is commanding people to be in a fearful, shaking, anxiety state. I think it is talking about respect, having respect for God, having respect for God's commands and who he is and what he wants and what he says. And that doesn't require getting in a shaking state, although maybe that would be a good thing for some people, but I'm just saying. Okay, so the fear and trembling refers to putting forth an effort to bring something to fulfillment or completion, knowing that this is a serious thing. It's an important thing. So with fear and trembling refers to having a healthy respect for God and God's commands. So then you have the word "for" at the beginning of verse 13, for it is God who works. So this follows the previous statement to work out your own salvation. And the idea here is to work or put forth effort because God is working in you both to will and to do. So one of the difficulties in growing and choosing to grow and change or whatever, choosing to do something, is that this does involve humans. It's not like we're robots. We are not robots. But then the problem is neither are we able to live well if we are independent and separated or severed from the life and energy of God. So you have this thing of, for it is God who works in you. So I know people who feel like God has forsaken them. And they feel like everything depends on me. And I am so worn out. I am so exhausted with working so hard, and I can't get this thing accomplished. And I just wish I could die. I'm sorry, but that's how some people feel. I'm not trying to depress you. But this is how some people feel, and I think part of the problem, they have forgotten that God is present working in them. And I can understand why they can feel like they can't see anywhere he's working in them. Well, this is one of the problems of the spiritual life. A lot of spiritual reality is not, you cannot see it physically. So God is working in you, and it says both to will and to do. So that sounds like God is working in you both the choosing and the doing. That is what it means. So I think it's easy to forget that a lot of what needs to happen in growing and changing is that we invite God into the willing and doing. I'm going to say this probably more than once. This is about giving God permission to work in my willing and doing. Because it is true that you can you can be afraid to let God work in you. I've had people tell me, I'm afraid to give God permission because I don't know what he will do. And that's one of the challenges if we feel a great need to be in charge of everything that's happening here in our relationship with God. And we have already decided what we're willing to do or not willing to do. So then it is very hard to let ourselves cooperate with God or give God permission to work the willing and doing. And this is God working in you both to will and to do whatever is for his good pleasure. Now, if your view of God is that all he cares about is himself and being happy, and all he cares about in relation to you is make you sad and give you trouble and make your life hard, okay, well, then it's going to be hard. This thing of cooperating with God becomes very difficult. And I'll just say God did not create anybody with the intention that he's going to control them and make their life miserable. That is not what God's goal is. He takes great pleasure in us participating with him in his work in the world. And he loves people. And he wants to help people become the best form of who he created them to be. That's his goal. He's not trying to figure out how to make a believer's life miserable. So we give God permission to do something, to do whatever we need inside, which we're not smart enough to know what it is. Working in our willing and doing. So John 7:17, if any man is willing to do his will, this is Jesus speaking, if any man is willing to do his will, he shall know concerning the teaching, whether it is of God or whether I speak on my own authority. So here is a fundamental truth. A person cannot know or believe or do something that he is not willing to know or believe or do. And we have to intend. Our intention has to be to know who God really is, to know who Jesus really is, to know what is actually true, what the reality is. We have to intend to know and do in order to know. Indeed, that's a fundamental truth. Then we have 2 Corinthians 3:18, which reads, but we all with unveiled face, beholding as in a mirror the glory of the Lord, are being transformed into the same image from glory to glory, just as by the Spirit of the Lord. So this verse is talking about what we would call worship, whether it's public worship or private worship. Worship of God is both the cause of spiritual change and it is also the result of it. As our ideas, beliefs, and images about God change to agree with what is true, with who we learn Christ is as we behold his face, worship. Our ability to worship will increase, and worship is the single most powerful method of change. It is, because it brings together every facet of our person. In worship, we are more in touch with God and more in touch with all of ourselves. Reaches into and praying. Singing and praying reach deeper into our souls and who we are at the core of our person. And unless we are thinking about something other than what we're singing or thinking about something other than prayer, what we're praying, things will go on inside of us that allows God to work, to will us and do us. That wasn't good English. Refusal to worship is refusal to see who God is and who we are, and to look into the Word of God and to look and to listen to the Holy Spirit. That's all the introduction. Okay, what is our will? So I say there in your notes, our will is our capacity for consent and non-consent. Will is the ability, you may never have thought of this, but will is our will is our ability to originate, cause, bring into reality some event. We, by our choices, make things happen. We bring things into existence. Events, things, by our choices. And our will, our choosing ability, is one of the most fundamental aspects. Can't think of the word I want. Of what it means to be created in God's image. In that way, we are created in the way God is, the way He is, in bringing the world into existence, bringing everything into existence that is. It's by choosing, Him choosing and speaking. And in this way, we are like God. We're not God, but we're like Him in this way. And so it is through our choices that we create things. So we're created to be creators of good things. And of course, we know from history, we know people who have created evil things and have taken good things and used them for evil purposes. That is because that is a freedom that God has given us, a capacity to make choices, and in our choosing we create. So our will is our capacity. The power, we have the power to select what we're going to think about and how much we're going to think about it, and what we're going to feel even. I know many people, the way they think about their feelings, they just have them and they don't have any power over them. And that's true to some extent, but not altogether true. Maybe feelings are one of the most challenging aspects of